When you think of the current political atmosphere in the U.S. these days, how many of you are feeling a little something like this?
You look around today and you say, you know, where are the values? Where's the integrity? Where's the personal courage, the selfless service, all of those values we were taught? Ultimately, where is the leadership?
That's Sue Fulton. Today, she serves in New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy's cabinet as the chief administrator of motor vehicles. Back in 1980, she was part of the first graduating class of women at West Point.
We all have this inner response. You have a tough job, an impossible mission, send me. And we were trained, we were taught to step into that gap. And that's why I think you see veterans raising their hand, stepping in and saying, I want to be part of the government because I want to bring these values that are core to me, that are central to my service, back to the leadership of this country.
And Sue's right. A lot of vets have raised their hands. They're running for political office this year, and a lot of them happen to be women.
There are 32 veterans, House and Senate, who have filed. 23 of them are Democrats, 9 are Republicans. To date, 11 of those have won their primary, 8 have lost their primary, and 13 are still in the running. Their primary is pending.
Debbie Walsh is the director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. If some are calling this year's midterms the year of the woman, a sub-story might be it's the year of the military woman. Debbie Walsh again.
You know, right now there are only 4 women who serve in Congress who are veterans, and there's a lot of opportunity here to see some growth in that number.
So it's more than likely we will see a doubling of the women in Congress who are veterans.
It's possible. But I think what we're seeing in this year with the number of women who are running who are veterans is, I would predict, the beginning of a change. We are seeing more women in the military, more women who have combat military experience, but more women who are military veterans. And it is a powerful part of their resume for women as candidates, because I think one of the things that's often held against women is that they may not be tough enough or strong enough for elective office. And I think when you are a veteran, it is very hard to argue that you don't have the strength of character or the leadership abilities to serve in Congress. If you've been tough enough to serve in Iraq or in Afghanistan in the military, I think while Congress may be a tough place, I think they're well equipped to handle what comes at them. It also gives them a credibility around defense issues, security issues, that women have been underestimated in the past. In many ways, it's a bit of a leveler for women as a credential for them to serve. I think it gives them a gravitas that men have been given as candidates. There's a respect that veterans deserve, and that women have not been able to take advantage of in the past.
Now, we're seeing a lot of the women who are running as veterans are Democrats. Part of that is because there simply are a lot more Republican seats open, so Democratic challengers, Democratic opportunities. But is there another reason that you see that there are more women who are veterans running as Democrats? We think of the military, or at least I think of the military, as producing folks who may be more conservative in their political ideology.
Yeah, so overall, women are more likely to be Democrats. If you look at the elected officials around the country, women who serve as elected officials are more likely to be Democrats. For instance, in Congress, women make up about a third of the Democratic caucus and only about 10% of the Republican caucus. So there's a disparity right off the bat. I think that a part of what we are seeing this year, not just among veterans, but women in general who are running, they are disproportionately Democrats. Right now, we've seen 476 women who have filed for the U.S. House. 352 of them are Democrats. So this surge that's being talked about is largely on the Democratic side. And I think it has largely come from a reaction to the election of Donald Trump, feeling that elections have real consequences, a sense that the issues and the policy concerns that matter to women are in jeopardy and that they need to run for office. right now that energy and that enthusiasm and that sense of really wanting to get more engaged in the political system and be that candidate and be on the inside is largely on the Democratic side. And we're seeing it among the veterans just the way we are seeing it across the board with women candidates. Mm-hmm.
Throughout American history, we've placed a lot of value on military service in our political leaders. Every president who served between 1945 and 1993 had also served in the military. Historically, it helped male candidates earn credibility with voters and demonstrate their patriotism and leadership. And that makes sense, because it was primarily men who served. But that's changing. Sue Fulton, who we heard from earlier, was part of the first female class of West Point graduates.
For me, West Point was a shining city on a hill. The opportunity to be at West Point, to be a member of the Corps of Cadets, was an honor that never faded with time. Our commitment to serve our country, the reason that we're here at the Military Academy, is something that is essential to who we are as a country. That it's essential that we carry forward the most important American values. That we be, not only that we be leaders, but that we be selfless servants. That ideal of service is drilled into you so that honor and integrity are always at the forefront.
And what were the expectations for Sue as one of the first women at the military academy?
The first class of women showed up on July 7th, 1980. And I believe that the expectation of a good number, if not the majority, of cadets and officers who were already at West Point was that none of us would last out the summer. I remember at the end of the summer when the rest of the Corps comes back for the academic year, there was genuine astonishment among many of them that there were still women cadets at the academy. So I think there was a strong sense that we didn't belong there, that we wouldn't be able to hack it, that we wouldn't have the strength. That expectation only affected me in the sense that I was bound to overcome it. I've often told people when they say, hey, what were the first women like, or what was that first class like? And I will tell you, the key element of succeeding in that first class of women was stubbornness. Those of us who were stubborn enough to overcome the obstacles, to absolutely refuse to be deterred, to absolutely refuse to be bullied. That's how we made it.
And when I look at the gap between when you graduated and now, thinking about the women that are running for Congress, Mikey Sherrill and others from the Naval Academy who graduated in the mid-90s, why do you think it's now that they're doing that? You talked a lot about, you know, this is inculcated in you when you're in the military, this idea of service and giving back and leadership. And it's now that we're seeing so many of these women who have that experience really jump into politics. Why has it not been earlier? Why didn't we see this in the 90s or earlier in the 2000s?
Well, I think we're in a crisis. I think that this country today is in crisis. People refer to them as norms of our politics and the way that our political leaders act and the way that they speak and the way that they respect other Americans. Those so-called norms are being shattered. I would say they're values. Our values are being shattered. The notion that if you have a political office of responsibility, you do not lie to your constituents. You do not lie to the American people. That you do not cheat. That you do not steal. Those core values are being shattered in front of our eyes. You know, as I've always said, you know, if you are going to be a successful woman in the U.S. Armed Forces, you cannot be deterred by obstacles. You know, you cannot be disillusioned by the odds. You have to be willing to fight for what you believe in, regardless of what's in front of you. And when there's a crisis like we have today, I believe that it's not surprising at all that women veterans are stepping up into that gap, because that's what we do.
Sue Fulton says it's no surprise women vets are stepping up. It's a core part of their military training. But is something else going on here?
So I think there's two things going on.
That's Senator Tammy Duckworth, a Democrat from Illinois and a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel. She served in the Iraq War and lost both her legs in combat.
One is a demographic shift where you see the military changing with the retirement of the Vietnam generation and sort of the older generation. What we have now in the military is a much more progressive military in many ways. People sort of think the military is very conservative, but it's actually become much more progressive. So you have, for example, a military now that have officers who for their entire career serve with LGBTQ colleagues. And that's where I think you see a much more democratic leaning former military running for office. As far as the women are concerned, you have the first generation of combat veterans who are female.
Tell me when that really started. Was that in the early 90s when women were allowed to fly in combat missions?
Yes, 1993 was when the decision was made. And so we now have, and this I think is a very normal thing that's happened in the past, we now have the first generation of female combat veterans who are now parlaying that background into runs for office. This is something the men have been doing from George Washington to, you know, Vietnam veterans came home from Vietnam and they ran for office. And so it's been something that men have been doing for a long time. It's just that the reason you're seeing the first group of women is because this is the first group with combat experience.
What does combat experience give you that you couldn't get by serving in another role in the military?
I think it's a confidence and an understanding of how to stick to the mission and the priorities. And I think that once you have that combat experience under your belt, it also lends, for better or worse, a greater legitimacy to the population. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, for me, running for office, for example, starting from 2006, the fact that I was a combat vet lent a legitimacy to my standing on national security issues, issues that maybe Democrats have been seen as weak on in the past. But when you have a combat vet standing there and a female combat vet, you don't get the same dings as you would have had you not had that experience.
And are these women who are running, are they reaching out to you and or have you been recruiting any of them to come to run?
Yeah. A little bit of both. I seem to be the person that women pilots reach out to. So I've been hearing extensively from women pilots, including ones that are still serving in the military, who have called me up and said, I'd like to run in 2020. I'd like to run in 2022. What do I need to do now as I wrap up my military career or as I get to a point where I'm getting to the end of my six-year term or whatever? And so I've been giving them advice. So yes, I am actively recruiting and I am actively being contacted by members who are of the military who think of running, and especially women and especially women pilots. There's a lot of Black Hawk pilots out there.
Pilots out there. What is the kind of advice that you give to somebody? I've talked to many of these candidates. Most of them don't have any political experience. What advice do you give them, number one, being a candidate, but about being a female candidate?
So I tell them that they will get the attention and the notoriety based on being a female combat veteran or a female pilot, but that they are not going to win elections based on that. That they might be able to get the initial look, but they have to do the hard work of developing the policies and do the hard work of running a real campaign. And that there's no coasting to victories. You can't be a professional hero and get there. So you have to be able to have substance behind what you do. And I say, now listen, if you want to use your military background as a starting point for how you develop policies, for example, if you want to talk about education reform and the need to invest in education and talk about how the Department of Defense has said that 7 out of 10 kids in this country do not qualify to serve in the military because they can't pass the basic math and English tests, then talk about it from those terms and say, this is why we have to invest in education and in public education, because if we want to make our country strong, we can't recruit. But you can't just, you're not going to get elected based on having flown helicopters in combat. And the American people need substance from you. And that's my biggest bit of advice for them, is do your homework and put your head down and develop a platform, develop real ideas, and just get out there and do the legwork of connecting with your constituents.